of its oversight function. I'm going to, obviously, just from the official side, I'm going to ask Kenzo just to come in with Honorable Cuthbert's questions and relating to both animal welfare and the question of some of the investment portfolio and some of the grant funding questions. Then, of course, the chair will come in as well. But let me start with the officials. Then I'll hand over to Nkenzo, who is in Limpopo. If he could come in, and then I'm going to ask Tinswalo just to deal with some of the illegal lotteries and the regulatory functions, and then we'll get to the others. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to you and the honourable members. I would like to just quickly touch on the Honourable Cuthbert's questions, which related to the investments. And I would like to just indicate that in terms of investments, the NLC would invest in line with Section 25 of the Lotteries Act, which provides that if money is not immediately required, those funds may be invested with the public investment commissioners or with financial institutions approved by the Minister of Finance. And currently, there are no investments in place. All the investments that were in place have matured and are currently sitting in a call account. Investments that would have been made previously, Chair and members, would have necessarily taken from what the National Treasury in April 2003 would have granted in terms of an exemption from investment surplus funds with the Corporation of Public Deposits. And Treasury would have given an exemption that public entities would be able to then invest with financial institutions in terms of their investment policy, and therefore NLC would have invested with financial institutions in fixed deposits, but they also invested with the Public Investment Corporation, which is the PIC. So, in terms of the surplus funds that are currently in the call account, we have engaged with National Treasury on those funds. Obviously, Treasury in 2021 September, they would have withdrawn that exemption, and all entities are required to invest with the CPD unless the Treasury exempts you. So we would have engaged Treasury on the matter, but I think just to note to the members that The National Lotteries Commission does not get funding from the fiscus, and therefore, in terms of the certain items that the investments would have also been kept for, is also to say when the license comes to an end, and currently I think we are heading for the fourth National Lottery license, we would see that there would be a dip in terms of the revenue that we get in the first couple of months or the first year. And therefore, we would use those funds as a buffer to also assist in the first year in terms of that. But we have seen a period where also the lottery would have been suspended for a period of time, and therefore those funds would have been utilized for that. But also in terms of any CAPEX that the commission would need to invest in, those funds would also assist in terms of that. So that's why the funds would also have been kept, Chair and members. Just to move on to animal welfare, I think from the National Lotteries Commission's perspective, the demand for funding, as indicated, I think, by Ms. Tindralo Nkuna when she was presenting on the operational outcomes, it far outstrips the supply in terms of the amount that we have as a budget. And I think in the previous financial year, a request of 14 billion would have come in, and we only had 1.2 billion available. And therefore, this makes it difficult in terms of the choices we made in terms of the funding based on our research and our assessments of the priorities at the time. But we do review our funding priority areas on an annual basis. And obviously, we would consider trends that are there on the ground and the needs that are there. And also, what are the social and economic priorities that are facing the communities? And I think it was a tough decision to exclude animal welfare. But we are currently reviewing the funding priorities for the 2023-24 financial year. And we do recognize that the animal welfare is an issue that people feel strongly about. And obviously, the animal welfare and also the ecosystem that is there in the rural communities is there on the animals and their livelihoods. And we certainly will consider including animal welfare in the 2023 call. So it's just to indicate that the decision is made based on research that would have been done. But obviously, there is quite a lot of concerns that are coming and we are considering it for funding in the 2023 call. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Nkenzo. We will move on now to Honorable Tring and Honorable Moatse and Mbuyani, and I'll ask Ms. Nkuna just to deal with the issue of the illegal lotteries and some of the other questions relating to regulations.
Thank you, Commissioner Etting, and thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. In response to the questions asked on regulatory compliance, I will also touch on providing answers on some of the monitoring and evaluation questions that we asked. With regards to illegal lotteries, we need to distinguish between gambling activities that are authorized by your provincial licensing authorities that we do not deem as illegal lotteries. However, we do have a concern in that they are competing with the national lottery. And that case in point is Lotto Star that was mentioned. Lotto Star is a licensed bookmaker by a provincial licensing authority. We did approach the courts as we were concerned that the activities of Lotto Star as a bookmaking activity were contravening the Lotteries Act and there were lottery type activities. That matter was brought before the court. There was leave to appeal that was granted for Lotto Star when the initial court outcome said that they were an illegal lottery and they were an unlawful lottery contravening the Lotteries Act. So we are awaiting the outcome of the appeal on that matter. There are other types of illegal lotteries for which we do take enforcement action on. And these are lotteries that ideally should be licensed or registered with the NLC. These would be fundraising activities by nonprofit organizations that require registration as society lotteries. There are also promotional competitions or competitions that would be run by profit-making companies for the purposes of making a profit and not promoting their products. Those are the ones we investigate. And in terms of the target, our target is set that in every financial year, we investigate 100% of all illegal lotteries that have been identified or reported by members of the public to the NLC so that we're able to take the appropriate enforcement action. And we do not have a specific number, hence we measure our performance based on the percentage of investigations. Because at any given time in any financial year, there would be different operators that would come up that would be running such type of lotteries that would deem unlawful. Hence, those we become aware of, we do investigate. There is research that was undertaken by NLC to measure the impact of illegal lotteries, their nature, their modus operandi, and also the various enforcement initiatives that can be undertaken to curb this. However, with the challenges that we have, particularly with the legislation, wherein taking bets on the outcome of lotteries, including the national lottery, is deemed a contingency in line with gambling legislation, and gambling legislation or gambling regulation falls outside the mandate of the NLC, and that is where we have such competing interests in terms of protecting lotteries as possible together with the regulated activities of the gambling sector. So in terms of our enforcement action, there is the investigation which would conduct on those identified lottery schemes that we deem to be illegal, wherein, as we had reported in the previous financial year, that 56 of those were closed, wherein they would have raised 77 million rand. This is where, in most cases, we do receive cooperation from those operators because they either unaware of the provisions of the Lotteries Act, and most of them would have been running such competition or raffles or fundraising activities, mainly for fundraising to support their operations and not as a profit-making mechanism. So we do receive cooperation in that regard. We have engaged with our policy making department, DTIC, in terms of looking at ways of how we can enhance our enforcement mandate to ensure that we curb the scourge of illegal lotteries. And that is a challenge that we have, in that there are lotteries that are licensed, there are lotteries that are licensed in other jurisdictions for which South Africans are not allowed to participate in lotteries outside of the Republic of South Africa. However, due to access to internet and social media, these lotteries that may be licensed in other jurisdictions, because those who would be legitimate in other countries, but others are also operating illegally in those countries, and they offer their products to the South African market. And those are the ones that we continue to identify and investigate. And it is proving to be challenging to ensure that we identify them. Hence, this year, our focus will is on looking at those lotteries that are promoted online to verify their IP addresses, so we can verify exactly in which jurisdiction are they operating, so that we can engage with regulators in those jurisdictions to assist us to curb those illegal lotteries. The next question, in terms of gambling addiction, we do engage with the Responsible Gambling Foundation. We do collaborate with other provincial licensing authorities, and we have been actively participating with the Limpopo Gambling Board, as we have a signed memorandum of understanding where we create, as part of our education and awareness, we create issues of prevention of excessive play, just creating that awareness, and prevention of underage play. Hence, as part of our monitoring activities, where the team would visit the retail outlets where National Lottery and sports pool tickets should be sold, making sure that there are play limits that are adhered to. From the operator's side as well, there is counseling that is made available should there be persons who are found to be addicted to lottery types of games. Hence, with the lottery, there has been strict control in terms of the number of games that are available. There are play limits that are put in place for every game. And in our education and awareness to create issues of responsible playing, we have seen that the public is aware of issues of gambling addiction. And when we try to engage them further and share our information in terms of how to prevent excessive play with the lottery and sports pools, they don't want to participate because they know that, no, you can list me as a prohibited person, so I cannot participate in any lottery or gambling activities. However, through our education and awareness and through our monitoring activities on the part of the operator, wherein as part of our reviews, we make sure that there is compliance to the play limits that are put in place, that the gaming mechanisms or the different types of games that are put in place do not lead to issues of excessive gaming. But that remains a concern, and it is the effort of the NLC that we have partnered with provincial licensing authorities together with the Responsible Gambling Foundation to assist in terms of tackling the issue of excessive gambling. Moving on with the question on illegal lottery schemes and how do we enforce on those, I did touch on the investigations that we conduct. We do contact those operators, inform them of contravention of the Lotteries Act and why we would deem those activities to be illegal, so that they sign an undertaking wherein they would discontinue their operations. If then they are not willing to do that, then we do take action in terms of our Lotteries Act, where we would take those operators through courts. But in most cases, the case that we've had was on Lottostar. There is another licensed bookmaker of which we are of the view that they are contravening provisions of the Lotteries Act, that we are also preparing a legal case in that regard. With our collaboration with the National Gambling Board, we do have a signed memorandum of understanding. We do engage periodically with the National Gambling Board as they actively monitor issues of unlawful winnings from lottery and gambling activities, particularly those that come from winnings from online lottery plays for lotteries that are not registered in South Africa and licensed by the National Lotteries Commission. So that is our engagement with the National Gambling Board. When they were reviewing their legislation, we did provide input as the NLC, together with other provincial licensing authorities. We do participate in their education and awareness and investigation of illegal lotteries and illegal sports pools and illegal gambling. And that is where we need to draw the distinction, as we have seen that in most of the areas, there would be illegal gambling activities where they would, from the provincial licensing authorities, they would identify that people are actually taking bets on the outcome of lotteries, either lotteries, South African lottery, or lotteries in the UK, or any other jurisdiction which are deemed to be contingencies, and they would engage with ourselves. So we collaborate in terms of investigation to verify that those type of activities either are licensed by the NLC or they are definitely licensed by the provincial licensing authority. So there are joint enforcement initiatives that we collaborate on. With regards to the question on community outreach, particularly with monitoring and evaluation, yes, we have seen that as much as we do try and reach as many organizations that we have funded to monitor that they have implemented the projects based on funding they have received, we do have limited capacity to cover all organizations. However, we have adopted a risk-based approach where we're able to profile organizations, either as first-time applicants, those who have been funded before, and they are compliant in reporting on the funding that they have received, but also with the type of funding that is requested. So with our monitoring, as part of that, there is pre-funding site visits that would be undertaken before an organization is funded. This is to verify the existence of the organization, the capacity of the organization to implement the project, and to actually verify that what they are applying for, the initiative that they wish to implement, is what they desperately need in order to support their communities, or then from NLC we can fund them for other activities. So the pre-funding site visits is what has been identified as a way of trying to mitigate the risk that was raised by one of the honorable members, where you fund an organization but there is no project that is implemented because they would have misused the fund. Post-funding as well, there is reporting that is required by the organization, wherein 6 months after they would have received the first payment for the funding, they have to submit a progress report, which is then reviewed by the NLC team. And if there is a need where the reporting is not adequate, there would be a post-funding site visit to ensure that such projects are implemented as they were intended and funded by the NLDTF. We do acknowledge that, yes, there are challenges in terms of rural communities or any other community that gets exploited by persons who know how to apply for NLC funding for good causes, and they exploit those nonprofit organizations with the guise of trying to assist them. And that is the area where, through our investigation units, such applications are actually reviewed and investigations are conducted to determine the legitimacy of those organizations. So that is what we do, as we do realize that there are organizations who are honest in terms of applications. The funding they receive, they are able to account for that, but there are those who actually, unfortunately, misuse the funding that they have received. And the last question that I will respond to is on FAFI in terms of any enforcement action that is undertaken. Yes, FAFI has been identified as one of the illegal lotteries. There are surveillance activities that are conducted by the NLC to ensure that we identify those FAFI operators. Because of our limited enforcement action in the Lotteries Act, we do collaborate with the South African Police Service, and we have received quite good cooperation for them, where we enforce on illegal operations from FAFI operators that we do monitor and report on as part of our enforcement activities. The issue of monitoring and evaluation and increasing the outreach that is noted is one of the areas that the NLC, through its board, has identified as needing in improvement. Thank you, Chairperson and members.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. As you indicated, there's quite an extensive list of questions. So, I think then just also to respond to Honorable Cuthbert, there was a question around media spending and so on. Yes, just to indicate very clearly, we are very concerned about the media spending. The media spending has been identified in the Auditor General's report. As I indicated, there is a culture of non-compliance, especially with procurement and supply chain management provisions. There's also been repeated findings around media. So this is part of the investigations. We have appointed a firm of forensic auditors a few weeks back. We'll be looking at all these transactions. But this matter will definitely, in terms of the PFMA, we have to act because they have identified financial misconduct in the area of media spending. So to Honorable Cuthbert, we will be attending to this matter, and we will be able to stop the irregularities with regards to media spending. I hope Honorable Ting's matters has been dealt with. Honorable Moatsi, Honorable Mbuyani, and then just around Honorable Burns and Kamashe's very good input. There's two issues he raises. The one is about the bogus applications. And as laid out by Tid Swallow, the issue is not so much with monitoring and valuation after people get it. The problem is there's a very weak verification process and due diligence at the application stage. So many bogus applications slip through our system. We are working actively on strengthening that verification and registration system of the NPOs. So we have set up a team, our CIO, together with the company's commission, the CIPC, and we're also trying to get involved SARS and Department of Social Development. But basically what we will be instituting, it has been done very well in the CIPC and in SARS, where we at the start of the appraisal, at the application stage, we have a thorough electronic verification process to verify that the NPOs are genuine, that there's a genuine applicant behind it, and that's why we will be able to root out some of the bogus applications at the application stage already. The other issue Honorable Burns Tamashi raised was around proactive funding. And again, just to add there, I think Prof. Pitiana, as I said, under his able leadership, he did indicate that this was the area that was most abused, but there's nothing inherently wrong with the question of proactive funding. So we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. In our review process, Prof. Pitiana has laid out clearly that we must have a more strategic partnerships with our community, with the NPOs, with the churches, with the traditional leaders. And if we form long-term partnerships at the community level, we will be able to then ensure that proactive funding gets used properly, it goes to the right beneficiaries, and it is really used for good causes. He's also mentioned the important thing which the board will be considering at its strategic session is that we look at tranche funding so that we don't give all the money in one go. We've also discussed the issue of a separate from monitoring and valuation, we have similar to what the DTIC has with incentives, an inspectorate, which really doesn't only, because monitoring and evaluation deals with impact, and they're very good at dealing with the impact of the work on the ground, but it doesn't deal very strongly with compliance. And the inspectorate will really look at has the money been used for its intended purposes? And then we visit projects, and we just look at the money flow and the use of the money properly, just like the inspectorate at DTIC does with regards to incentives. So if we will be creating an inspectorate, which is separate from monitoring and evaluation, which mainly just focuses on ensuring that we get value for money and that the money is spent on its intended purposes. So I think that would be the direction in which, when the proactive funding, 20% of the funding goes to proactive funding, 80% is through the distribution system. Chair, I also wanted to just comment, I think you've raised, yourself have raised the question, and then Honorable Malamacha as well. And then in the chat, Honorable Tswako, the question of legal fees. This, besides media buying, is the other major area of concern. The minister has also asked us to really investigate this, and we are getting a full breakdown of each and every one. But there has been, the Auditor General has also identified this area. Again, this is an area of repeat finding. There's also appears to be abuse of legal fees, because people have used it sometimes for private purposes, and we will be acting out. So both with regards to legal fees and media buying, as you know, the audit committee and the board has adopted the Auditor General's findings. Once you adopt the AG's findings, then the PFMA kicks in. And as you know, the accounting officer and the accounting authority must act. And as I said, the reason we have repeat finding in the institution is because there's no consequence management. The PFMA is never implemented. No action ever gets taken against people who don't follow procurement processes. So we will be acting in terms of that now. We will be acting very strictly. As I said, we do have forensic auditors looking at this as well. So that's the legal fees. Also, as you said, with regards to community outreach programs, we will be, as I said, we will be much more responsive. Currently, the board is on a roadshow. The chair has already done Eastern Cape. Currently, the chair and Ms. Mvulani is in Limpopo. So we will be, there will be a roadshow to all the provinces, interacting with the provincial offices, and then also strengthening the partnerships with the NPOs and the beneficiaries at the community level. Chair, with regards to the appointment of the permanent commissioner, that process is well underway. I think interviews are starting next week, and the board is really seized with putting in place that matter. It will be completed because, as I said, the appointment of the permanent commissioner is the priority of the board. You asked about the virtual monitoring. That is the system where, as I said, because there hasn't been a proper IT system and digital system, and there was a breakdown even in the proactive funding with regards to electronically keeping records, we will be going purely digital. The CIO is working on that with on a digital strategy, but every transaction will now leave a digital footprint, which means you can track every applicant, every individual who has applied, and throughout the value chain, we will be able to trace it. Like, as you can see, CIPC went from a manual system to a 100% electronic system. It can be done, and you can still have a massive outreach. So we will be moving to an electronic system so that we can then, as I said, deal much easier with bogus applications, but also for monitoring. And so, Chair, I think that covers the bulk of the question. The rest we will do in writing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to hear you'll be doing the rest in the writing, because I think there's the outstanding question around the minister. I think the department representative on the board. Also, I don't know if you can answer that one, and also how far are you with filling of vacancies?
Yep, Chair, so thanks for that. Yes, the minister's representative is now Dr. Cassius Lubisi, who, as you know, is a former DG in the presidency and cabinet secretary. He replaces Ms. Brown, and they were appointed from the end of March this year. Dr. Lubisi came into office, so the four appointments are there. And then, as I said, the vacancies, both they have completed the, as I said, a shortlisting for chief audit executive and for CFO will be completed this week. As I said, the board has prioritized the commissioner's appointment, and then there's just the COO, which, but as I said, the month of November will be basically on filling the vacancies. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, that's great. And then I think Honorable Burns Namashish's question about the list of projects that has been funded, I think that we can circulate to the members. I'm sure there is a list in the annual report, but maybe if we can just have an ongoing list so that we can also, as Honorable Burns Namash has said, do oversight in our areas of deployment. But thank you very much. If there are any questions that have been left out, we will ask you to just answer it in writing. I see there's a follow-up question from Honorable Namashe.
Burns Namashe. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think I just can't disabuse my mind of thinking of Mr. October as the former DG. It always comes first. So I nearly said my DG. The issue, Honorable Chair, I think he made a very important point where he said the chairperson of the board has started with the outreach program, which is a good initiative. The question I would have is, to what extent is that brought to the attention of the PCOs? For instance, let me be theoretical and say, in the Eastern Cape, he visited Amtata. Surely at Amtata, there's a member of parliament who has an office there, parliamentary constituency office. Now, is the outreach program by any chance linked to the constituency offices so that those constituency offices are also helpful in assisting the dissemination of information to communities and so on and so forth, including resident members of the portfolio committee in the provinces that the chairperson will be visiting? That's just that question, which I would be happy if we can get some clarity. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Burns. Masha, I think we must also request the entity to, given its mandate, to work closely with the public education department in Parliament, because I know they do very good outreach work to PCOs, and for us, in order for us to disseminate information from all the parliamentary constituency offices across the country. I think that brings us to the end of our discussion here today. And we, I think in closing, let us appreciate the work that has been done under very difficult circumstances by the new board. And we wish the board well under the leadership of Prof. Pityana for the difficult task that lies ahead, because as Honorable Cuthbert has said, we need to restore confidence in the entity in fulfilling their mandate. And we know there has been great damage done in the past. Also, we will also, as a portfolio committee, as we do with other entities that are challenged, we will be seeing you frequently and oversighting you frequently so that we walk this path with you. Can I hand over to the chairperson, Honorable Pityana, to close the discussions? Thank you, Honorable, chairperson, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the honor of calling me honorable. I just wish on behalf of the board and staff and the commissioner of the National Lotteries Commission to just take up a few matters that we would like to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee for emphasis sake. And then if time allows, I just wish to, as it were, wrap up our amazing time that we had today with the portfolio committee. Chair, the environment that we're in is clearly that we're engaged in a process whereby we support the investigations that have been initiated both by the president and by the minister, and also by ourselves, to set in process following up mechanisms to just make sure that we wrap up the work of trying to bring a significant activity and breadth to the work of the National Lotteries Commission. That work, Chair, is ongoing, and that work is producing amazing stuff on what has been going on in the institution. And we will soon, obviously, there will be prosecutions that follow that, as well as efforts to make sure that the money that has been abused is repaid. So that work is underway, Chairperson. The second thing that is in process is to make sure that we create environment within the institution that indeed in some respects had been hollowed out, had been repurposed for something other than what is intended by the Act. As we know, the Zondo Commission, the National Lotteries Commission did not feature in the Zondo Commission, but it is actually the same process. That by and large, the National Lotteries Commission had been repurposed. The important thing for us to make progress, Honorable Chair, is to acknowledge that the effort to break down a very, very important structure of our state had been far advanced. And it has now been stopped, and that there can be no turning back. And we have the unenviable responsibility of moving this institution forward. We're talking about making new beginnings and rebuild that which had been broken. We do that by making sure that there's an environment among the staff. Many of them are highly, highly gifted staff, but in large measure had been demotivated because of what is happening. There's a culture of intimidation, of fear. We are discovering, Chair, every day. There's a culture of intimidation, and many staff are living in just amazingly incredible, dangerous situations. And many of our staff inevitably are also targets of criminal activities and syndicates. They, in due course, it looks like our staff are going to need protection because of what had been happening all along. Instead of communities recognizing our staff to be the bringers of good joy, of good news, of development, of social cohesion, of making a difference in the lives of our people, oftentimes our staff are seen as a threat to what people had been receiving. So we have to deal with that. We need to really rebuild the staff component of our organization and to really purpose it also differently, to go back to what is intended in our constitution, a culture of ethical, moral life, openness, human dignity, and to make sure that the way we do our work is out of respect and high regard for our people. The third thing that we are doing, Chair, is that we are re-strategizing the critical aspects of the work of the commission that had been raised at this meeting, both in terms of looking at our grant funding rules and policies. We have to look again at what we need to do in terms of the SCM policies. But above that, we need to really seek to synchronize our priorities with really what is happening on the ground in our country. We live in a particularly difficult time for our people. The cost of living has gone very high. Poverty is rampant in many of our communities. The needs of our rural communities are crying out for attention everywhere we go. And that is really something that we need to look at again. The strategy for that we need to work out very clearly. Clearly, one strategy is the way we've been doing it. We've been dealing directly with the needy communities on the ground. But also, we can only do that up to a point. We'll do that, but we also need partnerships. We need partnerships with traditional leaders, partnerships with municipalities, partnerships with provincial governments, partnerships with religious organizations. We need partnerships with government departments. We need to bring that idea that is in the chapter on cooperative governance so that we can really partner with deliverables and agencies for delivery around the country so that the amount that we have can go a little further in partnership with others. And then beyond that, we're going out of our comfort zones. We're meeting communities. We're meeting staff at their desks, at their level where they are. We're listening to them. We're trying to understand the environment in which they work. We're seeing the communities and our partners in the different parts of the provinces. We're meeting beneficiaries and in the places where they actually are engaged and they're working. And there is an overall appreciation wherever we have been of this thrust of the commission being seen to be available and present. One of the key issues that the minister emphasized in appointing the new commission is to restore the mission of the National Lotteries Commission. And above that, Chair, to restore the trust of the people that we wish to serve, to partner in partnering with government to transform the lives of our people. And we need to restore that so that people begin to trust that the R5 a week that they put towards a ticket, that ultimately is a contribution bigger than the ticket. It's a contribution actually to the well-being of many people, many of them they may never meet. We committed to doing that, Chairperson. That is why the questions of the proactive funding that the Honorable Prince Spence Ngamashe is mentioning is quite correct, because it was a mechanism to enable a quick turnaround, an identification of an urgent problem, and to be able to act proactively to resolve it. That we can never do without. But we want to understand what is the difference between proactive funding and funding by application. What is the research that arises in order to trigger proactive funding? We need to work those things out carefully, because as far as we can see, it doesn't look like these have been worked out as carefully as they should have been, as they could have been. So, Honorable Chair, all of those matters will really take care of the questions that have been raised legitimately by honorable members. And all we can say is that as the National Lotteries Commission, we're making a new beginning. Finally, Chair, on behalf of the board, I just wish to thank the Portfolio Committee in particular for the reception that we have received as the board in the occasions when we come before the board, for the questions that you raise. And as the Acting Commissioner has said, please feel free to raise these questions directly with us, and we shall endeavor to answer them. We make a point of being very careful about the answers that we provide. We're trying to create an environment of openness and making sure that we are held accountable as the board by the public bodies where we actually serve. The second thing that we're doing, Chair, we want to finalize these key and critical appointments that have been raised by members. It is indeed true that we're working towards finalizing the appointment of the commissioner in the first place. And actually, according to the Act, the other staff positions are the prerogative of the commissioner to make the appointments in consultation with the board. And so it is important that we bring that up and we make sure that we have a commissioner in place. Having said that, let me take this opportunity, Chair, Honorable Chair, to thank Mr. Lionel October for coming to our rescue at a very critical time and bringing with him a load of experience and understanding and heart and passion to this work in the short period that he would have been with us. And also to really work with staff and give staff another good reason for coming to the office every day. And the atmosphere has become very, very different with Mr. October among us. And we really do appreciate his work that he has done. He's going to leave us sooner than we would prefer, but we believe that we will be able to recruit another commissioner so that other senior positions can also be filled with the greatest of speed. I wish to thank the minister, Ibrahim Patel, and his staff in the minister's office and the department for the collaboration that we have received in all the things we seek to do, both in terms of investigations, also in terms of looking forward and in terms of strategy, in terms of the critical issues that we have to deal with. The partnership with the department has been just incredible. Chair, I wish to thank my colleagues and the staff of the National Lotteries Commission. Dr. Cassius Lubisi is the minister's representative on the board of the National Lotteries Commission. Mrs. Beryl Kerr Ferguson is also a member of the board, responsible, among others, for the human capital. Ms. Precious Mvulane, a member of the board, also responsible for the board committee on audit and risk. And Mr. Willie Hofmeyer, very famous in crime busting and corruption busting, and is definitely in the right place. And the work and the time that we have spent together this morning Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, has been most valuable. The questions you ask, and us being aware of what is happening on the ground where you serve, and the interests and the concerns of the people you seek to serve. Please always never hesitate to bring any of those to our attention. Chair, I've got one last thing that I nearly forgot. The question of animal welfare is a very difficult one. The acting COO has answered it adequately. But I just want to say only that even within that, there are important considerations that we must consider. One is that there are instances where animals are necessary to assist, for example, people with disability. They need animals to assist them. That is never in question for the work to which the need for animals in terms of improving the lives of the people is something that we will always consider, quite regardless of what the policy of the commission is. And I don't want us to go away with the idea that there's a blanket prohibition of grants to animal welfare organizations. And I would have thought that we need to be much more discreet about how questions like that are raised. Honorable Chair, thank you very much and for this opportunity. And we trust that we'll be able to do the work that is set before us and give honor to the work of Parliament and the work of the Government of the Republic of South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for those words. I think we'll end the meeting on that note. Just to say that as the Portfolio Committee, we will soon be doing an oversight visit to the NLC, and we hope to hear a good story of progress being made. We know it's not an overnight solution because we want things done properly, but we will be with you soon so that we can hear what it is that you are doing in order to lift the NLC out of the bad past. Thank you very much. Can I then thank everyone for their attention and their attendance here today, and ask the Portfolio Committee Secretary just to brief us on what's coming next in our program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just regarding our next week's program, we will receive a briefing by the Minister on the first and second quarter financial and non-financial performance of the DTIC, which will complete our process, Chair. Then on Wednesday, we will be engaging with the NRCS and SAB as part of the ongoing oversight over these two entities. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. And with that, I close the meeting and wish you a pleasant day going forward.